everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens. We're Friday, March the 20th. I am Marc-Antoine Godin with Arpin Basu, each in our own home. Arpin, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Doing some good social distancing. I'm spending some time with my kids and my wife, and it's fun. I'm enjoying it. It's a nice change of pace, I find. It's good.
Yes, it is. It's tough business these days for Starbucks, though, because they don't have you as a regular customer.
Yeah.
Because it's your second office.
Exactly. Basically. Well, it's my primary office, in fact. I do more work there than I do at home. So yeah, I feel for them. But you know, it is admittedly a little bit more difficult to get work done with a house full of kids going stir crazy, but doing our best. We have a lot of stuff that we're working on, writing about this Canadiens team, even though they're not playing and even though there are no games going on. We are hard at work, but we did have some news. We had some Canadiens news this week. Pretty significant news, I'd say, with the announcement, or I guess the breaking of Cole Caufield.
The confirmation
of Cole Caufield returning to Wisconsin for his second collegiate season, which I think everyone agrees is the correct move. I think even ultimately the last one to agree might have been Cole Caufield himself, but I think from the sounds of it, even he agrees that this is the right move. But just the sequence of events that led to it was just such a less than ideal way to handle this, let's say. I'm interested to hear what you think, because I just found that, you know, I did some digging and learned that Cole himself learned of the Canadiens' intentions towards him via Marc Bergevin's interview with Mathias Brunet à La Presse. And so when Mathias asked him the question and he answered honestly, that was the first that Cole Caufield had heard of this. He was in the midst of finishing up his regular season and getting ready for their playoffs, which was the only way they had to salvage this season. And then this dropped right in the middle of that. And, you know, I spoke to a couple of people who sort of suggested that he felt some confusion and didn't really understand how this was coming out this way. But ultimately he did speak to Marc Bergevin, and that's when Cole decided to speak to Tony Granato. Tony Granato told Todd Malevsky of the Wisconsin State Journal, and then ultimately the Canadiens were forced to make an announcement of their own. But I'm curious to know what you thought of how that whole thing was handled.
Well, the optics are not great. That's true. But at the same time, I mean, if Marc Bergevin's perception of Cole Caufield's case was that he was doing better by staying in Wisconsin for another season, he would wait until the end of the season to, you know, sit down with him or discuss with him or whatever the situation is, and express that to him. Now, the interview with La Presse came on the heel of a press conference that really did not go well for Marc Bergevin, and he benefited from the opportunity of doing a sort of a do-over with a one-on-one interview with a press reporter. Although it's not a one-on-one interview, because from what I gather, there were actually a few people from the Canadiens brass that were in the room, you know, accompanying Bergevin. But it's just that those circumstances, he ended up saying something, I guess, that he had not, in his timeline, had not been ready to say to Caufield yet, or it was in his planning. So I think that this interview that he gave to La Presse was probably not something that he had planned at first, and it happened partly, at least, because of the fiasco that was his last press conference. So he ended up saying probably something more than he would have liked.
But I think it would have been a very reasonable question to ask him during the press conference. I kind of regretted right after the press conference was over that I did not ask him about what their intentions were with Cole Caufield. And it's a question that he should have expected to get either in the press conference or in that interview. So, I mean, whether it happened in the press conference or in the interview, this is something he had to know that people were going to ask him at some point. And frankly, because of the press conference, the way it went, This didn't seem to be a front burner topic, but I know that when the press conference ended, it did flash in my mind, damn it, I did want to ask him about Cole Caufield and what's going to happen at the end of his season. So he should have had an answer ready. And if this was, you know, I mean, and a perfectly valid answer would have been, listen, I haven't talked to the kid yet. I'd like to talk to him first. Then I'll tell you guys about it. And that would be the very normal thing to do. I mean, that's you hear hockey people do that all the time. You know, a coach will say, I know who the starting goalie is tomorrow, but I haven't told them yet, so I'm not going to tell you. You know, we hear this constantly in hockey. This was a case where, A, he should have been expecting the question, and B, he maybe should have answered that way.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, I think he was eager to show that he could provide answers to whatever was asked to him. So even if he was not asked that question at the press conference, when Mathias Brunet came up with that, he was more than open to divulge information and say, okay, you see, I can cooperate and be that guy that will provide information. So you ask me a question, I'll answer it. So I think that must have been a little bit his attitude. But that being said, I agree. It never looks good when something that matters to a player that's relative to his situation, to his future, that he learns about it in the media rather than being told from the interested party beforehand. So in that sense, I agree with you. It should have been done differently, but. The mechanics aside, I think that it is a good thing that Caufield goes back to Wisconsin. There's been a lot of talk. We've mentioned it on our podcast a few weeks ago regarding Jesperi Kotkaniemi hitting the wall and maybe Nick Suzuki hitting the wall too. That those were Claude Julien's words towards the end of the season. And I was thinking, well, you know, if it's such a given that any young player that arrives either from Europe or from the NCAA or from anywhere, anyway, is going to hit a wall at some point, and it's important that it's managed properly, well, would it be a good thing for the Canadians that they deal with that issue ASAP in the career of a player that they that they covet and for whom they have like big aspirations? And in that sense, maybe not playing in Montreal, but spending a year in the AHL could probably have provided that sort of effect of learning the pro game and having this behind his belt afterwards. But that being said, I mean, going back to Wisconsin, being a leader over there and being really the go-to guy for Tony Granato next season, I see nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. And it's actually, there's everything right about it. I mean, that's the thing, is that the decision in and of itself, there's nothing to criticize. It's absolutely zero from the standpoint of player development and asset management. And, you know, I mean, the thing about playing in Laval, like there's the convenience of playing in Laval, which is very good for the Canadians that they have a farm team so close by. But the proximity also creates, you know, some of the bad sides of being a Montreal Canadian applies to playing in Laval because you're so close. The media can come to you. The fans can, you know, you're in a very high profile, probably higher scrutiny environment than you would be if their farm team was in, say, Rochester. So
yeah,
bringing him here, but having said that, they did, you know, I mean, Ryan Poehling was there for the bulk of the season and didn't really seem to generate all that much attention and didn't have too much scrutiny on what was frankly a disappointing first pro season for him. So I think the Ryan Poehling example probably lends credence to what you're saying in the sense that I think initially people would probably be very excited to go watch Caufield play in Laval and there would be a lot of attention, but that would eventually die down the longer he was there, just like it did for Poehling. And then, you know, they had like a thing with when Kotkaniemi first showed up, there was a lot of media attention and then it sort of even that died down. So maybe you're right. Maybe Laval would not have been the worst thing for him, but I do think that having, you know, a truly dominant year, like he had an excellent freshman season, it was fantastic, you know, kind of led the Big Ten in scoring. So that's a good thing. But, you know, putting up truly prolific numbers as a sophomore is something that the Canadians would probably want to see from him.
Yeah, but, you know, then again, I mean, the one clear advantage of staying in school instead of going to Laval, for example, is the fact that you push back the beginning of his entry level by a year. I think that by the time that Canadians will bring him in the pros, they will hope that he's ready to contribute at the NHL level. And if he could spend all 3 years of his entry level as a Montreal Canadiens, that would be even better. So that's the luxury that's provided with being an NCAA player, where you can stay and mature there for a little while longer, you know, instead of having the first year of that entry level. I wouldn't say wasted in the American League, but it's certainly spent differently. But it all depends if the player is ready or not, you know. So we saw this season, you give the example of Poehling. Well, Poehling, rightfully so, he was in Laval. He had things to work on his game, and it's part of the process also.
Yeah, but there's, I mean, when you're talking about the entry level deal, I mean, listen, chances are very good that at this time next year, he's going to sign his entry level contract with the Canadiens. He will burn the first year by playing a game or two or whatever it is, and will ultimately be right back where he would have been. I mean, the most likely scenario here is the Cale Makar scenario, where he plays his sophomore year, wins the Hobie Baker. I don't know if Cole Caulfield's going to win the Hobie Baker, but Cale Makar won the Hobie Baker, and then signed his deal, burned his first year, played in the playoffs, was fantastic. That's the ideal scenario for Cole Caulfield. So if that happens, then ultimately the entry level deal, he'll probably be in the same, exact same place as he would have. Well, actually, no, he'll be a year later, in the sense that he's not burning that first year this year. So that's a good thing, I guess, from the Canadiens' point of view.
He would not have burned his first year by playing a game or two, because he was too young for that.
Ah, okay, there you go. So it all works. And in an ideal world, the Canadiens will be competitive next season. He will have an excellent sophomore year. Wisconsin will have a better season than they did this year, because frankly, it was not an ideal situation there for them either, as far as being a competitive team's concerned. And so maybe they have more experience next year, even though they lost, you know, Alex Turcotte and Keandre Miller, who signed with the Kings and the Rangers respectively. They do have a lot of young players coming back. Dylan Holloway, who's a projected first round pick in the NHL draft, should be back at school next year. So that team, and they have a bunch of freshmen. I mean, basically, I think four of their top six forwards were freshmen this year. And so it was a very, very, very young team. It showed on the ice. But they should be able to be more competitive next season. And, you know, Tony Granato told me flat out 100%, you know, Cole Caulfield is going to be given a huge leadership role next year, and we're going to put a lot of that on him. And that's one thing that we did not do this year, because it was already so much pressure on him. But next year, that's going to be an added layer that's added to his responsibilities in Wisconsin, is to be one of the team's leaders and to show the way on and off the ice, of how to make that a winning program. And so that's, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he handles that as well, because that's going to be another challenge for him.
Right. So Caulfield was drafted 15th overall in the last draft. A lot of people were surprised by the fact that he slid that much and ended up on the Montreal Canadiens' lap. I think it's a win for the organization to have a talented goal scorer of that kind available at 15. And now it's interesting, because of course by now we don't, because of the situation that everybody's aware of, the lottery for the upcoming draft is, you know, technically it hasn't been pushed back or for the time being. It's still set to be happening on April the 9th. Although there's most probably this lottery will be pushed back, because I mean, the league has to determine if the current standings will be the final standings of the regular season, and after that, well, what do you do with the playoffs? But mainly for the teams that are outside of the playoffs, well, and that will be taking part in the lottery, they'll be interested to know exactly where they're going to slot. But if the Canadians were to, if the lottery was to happen today, I think the Canadians, their odds to pick are the highest at the 8th and 9th rank. So that's pretty much where they are the most likely to pick.
If it was today, they would be 8th. They would be the 8th. Yeah. They would have the 8th. Based on points percentage, they're slightly worse than the Chicago Blackhawks right now. And so they would have a 19% chance at a top 3 pick and a 6% chance at the first overall pick.
Right. So it's interesting because it's a better draft than last year. So there are some quality prospects that will be available for them. I don't know if they will be looking for another goal scorer like Cole Caulfield. I don't think that they are exactly the same profile type of profile among the prospects. But I mean, Caulfield is generously listed at 5'7". It's going to be interesting to see if the Canadians are still going to go of the small and skilled forward for the upcoming draft.
Well, I mean, honestly, Marc-Antoine, they almost won't have a choice. I mean, if you look at sort of the consensus, well, no, we're not looking at the consensus. I'm looking at Scott Wheeler's midseason ranking for the 2020 draft. So this was released not that long ago, and so it is relatively current. It was released on February 19th, so it's been a month. You know, he obviously has Lafreniere first and Byfield second. You know, two huge, highly skilled forwards. But after that, you begin a run of small, skilled forwards, which the Canadians have a ton of. And I find this really an interesting dilemma. The Canadians tend to have good draft picks in years where the best players don't really fit what they actually need. Like, you know, they stretched a little bit taking Kotkaniemi at number 3. Not a huge amount, but a little tiny bit because he was a center and they needed a center. And it was a draft that was very thin on centers. And so they took who they felt was the best center available at the time instead of the best player available, perhaps. We'll see how that plays out. The year that they took Galchenyuk, because it was kind of the same deal. It's one of the worst drafts in the last 20 years was that draft. And the Canadians happen to have the number 3 pick there. So now if they pick 8, let's say the lottery doesn't move, but they'll probably pick somewhere between either in the top 3 or they'll pick somewhere between 8 and 11. You look at the third ranked prospect is by Scott is Lucas Raymond, Swedish forward, 5'10", followed by Alexander Holtz, German forward, 6 foot. Marco Rossi, the Ottawa 67's, you know, scoring wizard, is 5'9". I believe he's Austrian, if I'm not mistaken. There is Tim Stützle, who is also German at 5'11", highly skilled forward. A lot of people have him higher than 6, which is where Scott Wheeler has him. Cole Perfetti at 7 is 5'10". Jamie Drysdale, defenseman, 5'11". It just goes on and on. There's just a serious run on undersized, highly skilled forwards at the top end of this draft. And if there's one thing the Canadians don't necessarily need, is undersized, highly skilled forwards. And here they are. Now, no one, you know, you don't want to ever say like you should stop drafting skill. I think they should always draft skill. But it's just funny how this sort of happens, and the Canadians find themselves in this situation where they might have to take a player where they already have several of that type of player in their system.
That is true. That being said, it reminds me of the draft 2 years ago when I asked around about Quinn Hughes and the potential interest of the Montreal Canadiens in that player, who's an undersized defenseman. And I was told, well, you know, the team already has Victor Mete. How many undersized defensemen do you want? And actually, you should not stop yourself from getting a talented defenseman like Hughes, because you already have a less talented player like Mete on your roster. So I think that the same idea applies here, where you have to say, well, okay, so the Canadians might have smaller forwards in their system or even on their actual roster right now, but would the player that they get now be better? Would he be the one too many? Or would it be, would he push away other guys that are less talented than him? You want to go, if you are to keep a certain number of smaller players, well, let this guy be one of the ones that you're going to keep, because he's going to be more talented than the ones you already have. To me, that's the bottom line. You can have too many of them, but if he's the one who would survive the cut because he's one of the best, well, heck, draft him.
Well, that's all well and good, and I agree with you. I think they should, and I don't think they should. First of all, I think this whole notion that the Canadians are too small and that it's overblown. There is some truth to it, but I would take a smaller, more skilled, more talented player than a bigger, less skilled, less talented player any day of the week. And that would be my way, the way I would go. And I think that's the way the Canadians would go. That's been a real shift. They saw what happened when they prioritized size in the draft. The draft, it became a bit of a disaster. They were really well positioned that year, in the sense of having those 3 second round picks, and it didn't really pan out. Didn't pan out the way they wanted. And drafting for size, I think a lesson was learned by the Canadians that year that they shouldn't do that. But that's not something that, listen, it's a factor in player evaluation. But it shouldn't be the number one factor. It should be one of several factors that you consider when evaluating a player. And it just, but what strikes me is that over the last 2 years in particular, 2 years ago, the Quinn Hughes question, obviously that's the same draft as the Kotkaniemi draft that I was talking about earlier. And throughout that year, when they drafted Kotkaniemi, not only did they take Jesper Kotkaniemi, but they took a number of centers and just went on a run of centers. And that was a clear, obvious priority for their draft. They decided that they were going to take centers. And then the year later, they decided they were going to take left defensemen. Like, by and large, Struble, Fairbrother, Legarier, even the Rushinsky guy, the guy they took in the seventh round, the huge guy from Midget Triple A in Calgary, they seemed to prioritize that. And the year before, it was like, they took Kotkaniemi, then they took Ulanen, and they took Romanov, which, Romanov looks like a great pick. Ulanen, we're gonna find out what he's all about shortly here. But then you had Olofsson center, Hillis center, McShane center, Fonstad center, Hood center, Stapley center. I mean, it just went. So I'm curious to know how they're going to approach this draft, because the two areas of real need that you see in the future for the Canadians, the two positions of real need, they've kind of devoted two separate drafts to address those two specific positions. I kind of wonder if the Canadians are going to shift course, and I hope they do, where they just forget position and they just draft players and they just go look for the best players and not have this constant ulterior sort of goal in mind when they go to the draft, aside from simply drafting the best players. Because it seems like, under Bergevin, they've had years where they drafted a bunch of lefty, a bunch of centers, a bunch of big guys. They've always had some other sort of goal aside from just getting the best players. I'd be interested to see Trevor Timmins and Shane Cherla just draft the best players imaginable without some sort of theme attached to it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, if they say, okay, well, for example, if they really like a defenseman like Jake Sanderson, for example, who's really a guy who has entered the conversation as a potential top 10 pick. He's the son of Jeff Sanderson, the former Whalers goal scorer, Hartford Whalers. So, Sanderson is a left D. So you got the only guy that's the only defenseman that's rated higher than him right now is Jamie Drysdale, who's a righty. But he's really, unless the Canadians end up with the third pick, they're not going to be able to grab Drysdale. I'd be very surprised if they did, if they were. So the only guy after that is Sanders, but he's a lefty. Are they going to stop themselves saying, well, we are, our cupboard is full of left defensemen, so let's pass on him. Once you start drafting out of needs, you'll fill your cupboard with guys for certain positions, but you sort of commit yourself to that strategy from year to year, because right now the need is clearly on the right side of the blue line. And in other positions also, I think the Canadians would be wise to get a couple of goalies also, and because they've got quantity, but in terms of quality, well, you've got Price, you've got Primo, and after that, you know, that's about it. So having more goalies would be good. So, but focusing on the best player available, I know it's a cliche, but I feel as though the Canadians have veered away a little bit from that in the last couple of drafts, like you said. So, and I don't think that the fact that that there are a lot of young smaller players that are there at the top of the draft is going to be a big influence. But you've got a guy like Anton Lundell, who's the Finnish forward, mainly a center. He's 6'1", so he's one of those guys at least who's got a decent frame. So, but just picking up on this, Lundell has been playing in the Liga this year. But the other two guys that you mentioned before, Raymond and Olds, are the top two Swedish players in this draft. And the fact that there's not going to be an under 18 world championship will make it so that they will have never shown what they can do among players of their own age. And for certain players, it hurts their stock a little bit, because you don't gauge really what's when you play either with on an under 20 team or even with men's, it can blur a little bit the real upside that you have as a player. And if you put those guys in situations where on a level playing field with guys of their own age, well, then it gives you a proper picture of really how they compare. So there's a lot of information that'll be missing from this upcoming draft because of the lack of games that won't be played, and also from the fact that the NHL Combine also is threatened from just not happening.
Yeah, and you know, I think a guy like Stützle too kind of falls into that category, because he's also playing with men in the German league and has done very well. But you know, it would be nice to see him play against his peer group just to get a full evaluation, especially considering, you know, the U18 Worlds were to be played in Plymouth, Michigan. So even like the GMs of the playoff teams would have been able to go and would have been able to evaluate. And this is a tournament that's often held in Europe. So, you know, that was a unique opportunity for NHL GMs and for Mark Bergevin in particular. And really, you know, the teams that were going to miss the playoffs, and obviously the lottery teams, you know, their GMs were going to be obviously jumping on board on the scouting circuit, you know, as soon as the season ended or even before. And in a way, I find it might be a relief for some of the scouting directors that they don't suddenly have their GM jumping on, like, you know, kind of peering over their back at games and like asking questions about guys and how they can suddenly see, you know, they can see a kid go and run over this huge 6'4" defenseman, and he decides that on that one viewing that he's this rugged player that I like and that's character, and then he gets into a fight, and then it's anyhow. So it's
Isn't that the backstory of Dalton Thrower?
That is the backstory of Dalton Thrower. That Mark Burt, but that is exactly what I, well, he's the guy I was thinking of, is Mark Bergevin. That was his first draft, and he comes out and he tells us, and he's like, yeah, in the second period he got into a fight and he really beat him up, and I was like, character in this, rah, rah, rah. And they used a second or third, I think it was a second round pick. I could check that.
Second round pick
on guy, because Bergevin happened to see him that day drop a guy in a fight, and yeah, so that's the kind of thing that you like to avoid. And that was his first draft as GM, and so maybe, you know, he's probably learned from those situations. But and it's not as if, you know, it's, I mean, there's some players that maybe they could have got after that. You know, there's, you know, Jordan Martinuk went right after that. Chris Tierney went right after that. Teddy Bluger was the pick after, who's finally made it to Pittsburgh. So there were some players, you know, Damon Severson. But in any case, the point being that the scouts, the actual scouts, and, you know, you did a good job of reflecting that in your piece today, on how the Canadians are going to adjust to the drafts, that the scouts have done the bulk of the work already at this point. They did have some final events that would have kind of put the bow on the whole thing. But the information, they have it, and they've made evaluations, so they're ready to go. I'm really fascinated to see if there's going to be a different strategy from the Canadians on the draft floor this year. And just get away from all the distractions of needing a position or needing a certain size demographic or what have you, and just sort of go at it from the most basic way possible. Like, let's insert as many talented players as possible, whether they're goalies, defensemen, forwards, wingers, centers, who cares? Let's just add talent. And that would be a nice change, and it would just allow them to simplify their process on draft day. A great deal.
Well, you talk about the draft strategy. There are two items that I brought up in my piece in regards to the situation where, you know, everything's pretty much idle right now. How could it affect the strategy with the Montreal Canadiens? One of the items is that if the Canadiens or any other team would find that there are still question marks on too many of those prospects, those first year of eligibility prospects, you know, that there are things that, you know, even though they go to the video and they see for a second time what they've seen a first time live with their own eyes, and they reassess and all that, if the current situation makes it so that they have doubts about more prospects than they usually would, well, perhaps that it would be, we might see an increase in the number of overagers that are drafted this year. From 1 year to another, you have between 40 and 50 guys that are 19, 20, or even 21 years old that are being drafted. That's pretty much a given every year. But this year, you know, if you have one year or more of a book on a certain guy, and you can predict with more precision what can be his growth or his progression curve, then it makes it for a less dangerous pick, you know, a less risky pick. And the Canadians have done very well in that sense last draft when they drafted Matthias Norlander with their third round pick. He's a guy who was 19 years old. So I could certainly see a scenario where more guys that are 19 or 20 years old would be drafted because of that. And the other thing is, that they could also, the fact that the Canadians have 14 picks, which is a huge amount, it's probably a good time for them to try to go the other way from what Marc Bergevin is used to and what he believes in. Usually he's a guy who will draft down rather than trade up, and he'll go for the quantity of picks, instead of trying to go for quality. But if you have doubts about many prospects and you say, well, there are certain guys that we know that we have zero doubt about them and we don't need another viewing of this kid, that's who we want. Well, it's probably the environment is good for them to trade up and try to gain a few ranks to make sure that they get the players that they like.
Yeah, and that would also be a nice change of strategy. Overall, I'd like to see the Canadians just change something in the way that they draft players, because I think everyone would agree that I don't think they've been quite as bad as people accuse them of, but they haven't been great on draft day. It's not been a strength of this organization, at least since Marc Bergevin has been general manager, and probably before that as well. So I would like to see some sort of discernible change. What you just mentioned would be one of them. Be more aggressive trying to trade up. It's harder than ever now. Teams really don't like trading down high in the draft, I should say, like high in the first round. It's hard to get from pick 12 to 9, let's say. Like, that's difficult. That costs a lot of assets, but the Canadiens have those assets. So let's see. And let's see what the draft dynamic, the dynamic of trading on draft day might be completely different, because, frankly, the chances of holding a traditional draft as we've known it here in Montreal, it's pretty unlikely right now. Let's be honest. It's not a very likely thing that this is going to be a normal draft the way we always have it. And so doing it remotely, does that impact how Marc Bergevin works the floor and what have you? Or maybe he can even be more efficient with just by just by making phone calls. We'll see. I'd just like to see something change, because I think that they're rightfully being criticized for how they've gone about doing the draft, and they've gone about it in this way for 2 years. Why don't they mix things up and just put the emphasis on talent, whether that's trading up to get the more sure talent, whether that's drafting overagers, and whether that's just drafting skill guys who happen to be small forwards and not worrying about what everyone says about how small they are. I just want to see them focus on talent at this draft.
You know, just regarding the size of the players, all 5'10" players are not created equal. Some will stay 5'10", some will keep growing. And this is the sort of information that you can get at the combine with guys that are experts in player development, in either in conditioning, but in analyzing, you know, the growth of a player. And when you see the bulk of a player, his frame, does he have space to fill his frame and get thicker, get bigger? What are the genetics for these players? This is all the sort of thing that usually the combine really helps you in getting a lot of information on that. So there'll be a lot of back channeling going on and trying to figure out using other ways if the combine is not taking place, to get that sort of information so that you say, well, if we're tentative in getting a smaller player, is there one that actually is going to keep growing and we should be fine because all of his uncles are 6'2" and, you know, he's going to get taller or whatever. I think that it's the sort of information that they will need to get, because if you simply look at a list, that's not enough. You know, that's the sort of information you need to get some other ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's going to be everyone's challenge. And you know what? I mean, frankly, this is very low on the priority list of problems in the world right now. But this is something the Canadiens and all 31 NHL teams are going to have to deal with. The reality that there will likely maybe not be a combine, and it'll at the very least be delayed, and in all likelihood will not be the way it has always been done, if it's held at all, is something that we'll all have to get that every team's gonna have to get their heads around. But yeah, there's a lot of factors that go into this, and the thing is that all this is happening, and yes, it's unprecedented, and we've never seen a situation like this. But you know, this year's draft for the Canadiens was extremely important, just because of the sheer number of picks they had, how high they're going to be drafting, and where they are in their whole development, reset, retool, whatever you want to call it. So a lot of work to be done by the Canadian staff in very unusual circumstances, and very eager to see how that's going to pan out whenever the draft is held, in whatever form it is held. So I think we're going to wrap it up there. I just want to remind everyone who are not subscribers to The Athletic, we, as I mentioned off the top, we in Montreal specifically are going to continue writing about the Canadiens, about what's coming up, about what went wrong this season, all sorts of different features. We have lots of ideas. We are not going to stop covering this team, even though there's no hockey going on. I do want to mention a really cool initiative that our bosses in San Francisco did, which was to extend our 7-day free trial, which is normal for any new subscriber, where you get to check us out for 7 days before deciding to actually pay for a subscription, has now been extended to a 90-day free trial. So you can check us out for 3 months, watch what we do during this time where there's no games going on and people kind of need distractions, and watch just sort of the creative stuff that comes out of our team, not only here in Montreal, but across Canada, across North America, over in the UK. Lots of really unique and frankly impressive stories coming out in spite of the fact that there's no access and no content to report on. We have a Slack channel over at The Athletic called Let's Get Weird. And every day there's just ideas flowing. Like, it's just this steady stream. It's like a news ticker of just like awesome ideas of things to do. So, stay tuned for what's coming on in Montreal, on the Canadiens, and just generally speaking on The Athletic. And if you want to check it out, you can go to theathletic.com/free90days. Free, F-R-E-E, 90 days. Gives you a 90-day free trial to check it out. No you know, no commitment. You can end it after 90 days if you don't want to stay on. I think after 90 days you will want to stay on, but you could check that out. Or if you just want to subscribe, you can also get a 40% discount at theathletic.com/athletic support. That's theathletic.com/athletic support. We'll get you an instant 40% discount on your subscription if you want to sign up today or any other day. But for now,
that's even better. That's even better than the free 90 days.
That is better than the free 90 days, because at the end of the free 90 days, you'll have to pay full price. But so if you know that you want to subscribe,
yeah,
go to theathletic.com/athletic support. If you want to check us out, go to theathletic.com/free90days. Two options for you, both of them very good and equally good. But the main thing is to just come and check out what we're doing. And I think, you know, during these times when you want just something else to read other than what's going on in the world right now, we are doing our very best to try and provide that.
That's it. And we'll even have something on Alex Belzil. So perfect. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with Le Super Athletic, our friend, the French version of our podcast. So thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Arpin. Stay safe, and we'll talk again soon.